Welcome to A Mathematical Basis for Reality.
Chris, I think you should tell them that Physical Truth is a book on mathematics and philosophy, and that it's a good story.
Yeah, hello. I called my buddy Wayne last week. Things are getting worse, and I'm stuck here in Calgary. He's out in Victoria, and I got to get out to see him. He went on dialysis in August, in middle of August, and I just found out about I had a court case I had to deal with September 4th, so I'm stuck here, and then the thing got laid over. Now I've got October the 1st, I got to go in, and it's really dragging me down, because I need to get to see him right away, and sometimes I can call him, of course, but I don't call him that often, because it's every other day he's on dialysis. The rest of the time, it's pretty well knocked him out. He's my best friend, and I'm anxious to get there. So when I'm talking about this aspect of empty space, I'm looking at, are there any properties to empty space? Is it all just, okay, we have dimensions of, it has dimensions of space, takes up space, it also occurs over a period of time, so that empty space has both space and time as coordinates. It also has certain properties as we measure these spaces according to whether or not there's electric charge or electric fields or magnetic fields or gravitational fields or material, whether there's a percent. This actually affects empty space. So empty space has to have these properties to respond to the presence of material or presence of electric charge and magnetic fields. And are there other properties to it? Are there things that belong to empty space? And I'm talking on a metaphysical level here. Not exactly, this is not physics. This is starting into the world of metaphysics. But do we have something that determines that there is some sort of difference, let us say, in the quality of the empty space? If it creates particles, is it that things have occurred in the past and it may affect the future of this empty space? Or is it all completely conserved once you tie something into a particle, let's say, and the particle through quantum fluctuations has been formed? The particle goes through various different experiences and so forth. And let us say the particle is then, due to enormous amounts of stresses, strains, or maybe combining with its antiparticle or whichever, is unbound. And now it's released back into energy in the form of either electromagnetic energy, or maybe it would deteriorate into gravity waves, depending. Does this new space-time having, if you like, this energy associated with it, with the fluctuating, let's say, gravitational stresses, strains, and shears, or highly fluctuating electric and magnetic fields and so forth that would be result, is there a difference in their quality because of experiences that it has gone through? We're looking at a case now of a very fast-spinning black hole, which I described. And I missed our last episode, so I'm putting this together to try and get this episode out. It's Friday, and I'm trying to get it out by tomorrow. We had a very fast-spinning black hole. It's spinning so fast that the equator of the black hole is spinning at the speed of light. It cannot spin any faster. That's as fast as it can go. We're looking at the temperature. Appears from the calculations we have that if this is such a case, the temperature on the surface of the black hole would be at absolute zero, which goes very much against physical laws. As we know, it's the third law of thermodynamics. And we also look at the actual stresses and strains on let's say, the coordinate lines, the lines of latitude and longitude, and the lines of longitude would be infinitely stretched. So if they're infinitely stretched, they can't really vibrate. And if we look at light or electromagnetic radiation, it's really just a fluctuation in the space-time continuum, which travels at the speed of light. Is it that if the space-time is stretched so much that it very simply can't vibrate, it can't have electric or magnetic fields on it? Would this qualify, I guess, or could we then say it looks reasonable that we actually have a situation where something is at absolute zero? It would be a black hole spinning so fast, the equator is spinning at the speed of light, it can't spin any faster. So it can't spin any faster, and what we do then is, of course, we toss in a brick and see what happens. And will it pick up the angular momentum of the brick? Is this possible? Can we solve for this? Just to see that with some intelligence, looking at what happens either just outside the event horizon and at the event horizon itself, what happens if we do have a black hole that's spinning as fast as it can and we add angular momentum to it by throwing a brick into it? And hopefully let's see what happens. Okay. Continuing on with this idea. Let's say we have a brick. And let's say, just for the sake of argument, this is a brick comes out of the Medicine Hat Brick Factory. It's got Medicine Hat written on it. Let's say it was written in, it was made in 1957. So Medicine Hat, 1957, somehow stamped on the brick. And it comes from clays and so forth that were fired at certain temperatures from around Medicine Hat area. So this brick has information on it. Now, it has information on the composition of the brick, the atoms or molecules that make the brick up, a type of clay or a baked clay that makes a brick, and indented into the surface of it, let's say is MH space 57 or Medicine Hat 1957. This is information. So if we now take this brick and throw it into a black hole, how do we know in any way that that black hole had a brick thrown at it that was made in, that the brick was made in Medicine Hat in 1957? Also, if now I'm going to try and follow this idea, and we take a brick and we have what we call an extremely fast spinning black hole, and we throw a brick at it so that the black hole should pick up angular momentum. And it's going to hit the black hole, and it as it crosses the event horizon, the parts of the brick that cross the event horizon have left our consideration forever. We don't know if they exist or not. We don't care. It's gone. Never see it again. It's like out of it. What processes happen on the surface of the black hole? Is any trace left on the surface, or does it disturb the surface of the black hole as it is crossing it? One of the things we know, and this is what I think Dr. Israel has done, it's well known, that if an object crosses an event horizon, it crosses it at the speed of light. We see it traveling across at the speed of light. That helps. That helps a great deal, because it's going to affect the coordinate system on that particular point on the surface, on the surface of the event horizon, as it is crossing it. So that is definitely going to cause a disturbance in the field lines, or not necessarily the field lines, in the coordinate system. Let's not talk about field lines, let's talk about just the coordinate system. So we have latitude, longitude. The longitude lines are no longer running straight north to south, we usually see it. They're now swept along, if you like, With the direction, it'd be with the direction, well, probably. So you're spinning one way, so it's kind of lagging behind. No, it's the opposite way. Okay, so it's dragged out because of the spin of the black hole, so that the north line of longitude never reaches the south pole, because it's infinitely stretched, has an infinite distance, and doesn't really cross the equator, which is moving at the speed of light. And same thing from the south pole, it would move upwardly, never gets to the north pole, because it bends as it approaches the equator, and is back, swept the other way, along the lines of the equator, and it's infinitely stretched, if you like, at the equator. So this is what the lines of longitude, which is our coordinate system, which maintains the metric or measures the speed of light as being the same in all reference frames. So this now coordinate system, let's say at about 60 degrees up from the equator, is moving at roughly half the speed of light, let's say. And now all of a sudden a brick hits it. Now all of a sudden that coordinate system is moving at the speed of light, because a brick just crossed it and the brick's moving at the speed of light. So that's going to affect that for a very brief time. That will affect the coordinate system at that point. I think we might be able to get somewhere with this, following this particular line of thinking. And we're all trying to figure out, for example, that as this black hole thing happens, as the brick crosses the event horizon with the black hole, what happens to the knowledge that this brick was made in Medicine Hat in 1957? That's where I'm going with this. Okay, this is chapter 15, part one, but the second half of part one, Entropy Reversal at Galactic Centers. Now we toss in a brick. Let us suppose a brick crosses the event horizon, enters the black hole, and leaves our further consideration forever. It has added angular momentum to the black hole. Let us also surmise that the brick has no charge or does not add to the electrostatic potential of the black hole. Say it has entered the black hole at some point, see a point of entry of pi by 6 radians above the equator. Due to frame dragging and the fact that the brick crosses the event horizon at the speed of light in the local reference frame of the surface of the black hole, a perturbation forms on the function describing the tangential velocity going from the pole of the black hole to the equator. If the black hole is spinning at maximum spin, then the tangential velocity of the surface is zero at the poles and is the speed of light at the equator. This is described by a smooth and analytic sine function. It's actually 1 over sine, so you're dividing by the sine function. However, at the entry point, this function forms a solid pond. This soliton is an increase in the curvature of space-time on the surface of the black hole. It equals the amount of angular momentum added to the surface of the black hole. There is a tidal effect which forms another soliton in the opposing hemisphere. This addition to the overall angular momentum of the black hole would lower the temperature of its surface to below absolute zero, unless this additional curvature can be removed from the system. Since there are differences between the stresses below and above the point of entry, the perturbations are forced towards each respective pole. At the poles, the tangential velocity is zero, and differentials in curvature along the equipotential lines attempt to force the perturbations into singularities at the poles. Let us look at the phenomenon step by step. First, let us look at the equipotential lines as the brick crosses the event horizon. See figure 15.3. So I'll look at figure 15.3 here. 15.3 shows equipotential lines of the poles of the spinning black hole to the equator at the time a brick is thrown into it at a point pi by 6 radians above the equator. And we can see a distinct perturbation that goes around the entire, at the same latitude of pi by 6 radians above the equator. So there's this line going through representing spinning of the black hole at the speed of light at that point, at the speed of light at the equators, and everywhere else is following a smooth line up to those points, the perturbation of the equator. Of course, we must not forget about tidal effects. Gravity is not just a set of vectors describing a vector field of forces and so on. There are tidal effects to take into account, since gravity is a vector field involving shears as well as stresses and strains. Actually, it's a tensor field involving shears as well as stresses and strains. An everyday example is given by the behavior of tides. The moon's gravitational field pulls the surface of oceans towards it to form a high tide, but this effect is not just on the side of the Earth, which is facing the moon. The moon also pulls the Earth towards it, and it, quote, leaves behind, quote, the ocean on the far side. As a result, there is a high tide on the surface of the Earth which faces the moon, and a high tide on the surface of the Earth that faces away from the moon. It appears there is a squeeze on the Earth's oceans at the poles, which causes the surface of the oceans to bulge both towards and away from the moon. Think of squeezing a sponge and it squirts outwardly from where you squeeze it. This is the tidal effect of a gravitational field. This must also be brought into play in the case of throwing a brick into a very fast spinning black hole. The black hole's gravitational field pulls the brick across its event horizon, and at the same time, the brick's gravitational field pulls the black hole up just as suddenly in the opposite direction. As a result, a perturbation on the bottom half of the black hole forms, which equals the perturbation on the top half. Actually, the total curvature which results from the perturbations caused by the brick is evenly distributed top and bottom. Half the curvature is in the top hemisphere and half in the bottom. The total energy content throughout the surface of the black hole resulting from the change in curvature is equal to the mass of the brick times the speed of light squared. One may simply apply the total energy content to the brick, which is rho L sub mu, that is equal to capital G mu nu. Equation 15.9. I'm pretty sure that's G mu nu equals rho L mu L nu rather than T mu nu. I have to double check that. It's either T mu nu or G mu nu, but I think it's G mu nu. Where rho is the density of the brick and L sub mu is the four velocity of the brick crossing the event horizon. From there, simply integrate through equations 15.4 to determine the resultant path of the equipotential lines. We have applied a Maxwellian distribution of curvature due to the perturbation caused by the brick with total curvature in the upper hemisphere equal to the curvature in the lower hemisphere. We have shown the various orientations of equipotential lines from the time the brick crosses the black hole to its resultant tidal effect and eventual transit towards the pole in 15.4. So we turn to 15.4. Very nice diagrams here, I must say. And we see A, the brick crosses the event horizon. We have tidal effects, so we have a perturbation above and below the equator, and that pi by 6 above, pi by 6 below. And then the perturbations are pushed to the poles, to each respective pole. And very close to the poles, the perturbations are squeezed into a possible singularity. I don't quite get there. Figure 15.4, a progression of perturbation resulting from throwing a brick into a very fast spinning black hole. The initial perturbations at pi by 6 radians above the equator causes a second matching perturbation below the equator. These perturbations are forced to the poles due to the differences in tension above and below the perturbations caused by differing curvatures on the surface of the black hole. The resultant solitons are a shock wave The resultant solitons are shock waves and move to the poles at the speed of light. But each perturbation cannot be completely squeezed into one point at the pole. A two-dimensional perturbation of curved space-time cannot be compressed completely into the point where there is no tangential velocity, because space-time cannot be curved infinitely. There is a limit to its bending and squeezing into a singular point at the pole because of the boundary conditions of Schrödinger's equation. A small sphere of space-time forms at the pole. All of the curvature contained in each soliton cannot remain completely on the surface of the black hole. It forms a pimple at the pole. A very small part of space-time is lifted slightly from the Schwarzschild radial distance at which the escape velocity is the speed of light. This bit of space-time is squeezed and forced directly away from the poles at a speed very close to the speed of light. Let us examine this bubble of space-time. Bringing back Schrödinger's equation as before, bracket. If you read the previous chapter on Schrödinger's equation, then you don't have to wade through the following and can take a bit of a break, while the slow ones get to go through this. End bracket.
Thanks for listening, everybody. If you liked what you heard, you may subscribe in your podcast provider and perhaps share in various social media sites. Bruce has promised he won't change the links anymore and screw up trying to find the next episode. Please enjoy the rest of your day and may everything work out for the best. We try to have a new podcast every Saturday, so see you next week.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.